Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
We are back. It's another Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are well very quickly. Newest patron, Esmail Trabuzzi. Thank you for your support and all of those other wonderful patrons who were able to enjoy the, for those of you unaware, Roma 1, Venezia 0. This is called an away victory streak. Now, Paul, you can pause. I don't know if Wikipedia will have an entry for that specifically, but Roma, 2 wins in a row in Serie A. Now, Andy, I don't know if they got a victory prior to the one against Udinese last April, and that one was part of a streak, but I'm afraid to even begin to get the data team on that one. So we're going to take this one on its face and just enjoy it. But again, before getting into all the details, patreon.com/RomaPress, at Roma Press on social media. There's really no need to go into like the deep details. This one was much like, and it reminded me of that, admittedly, and it's going to sound like an insult, but I do not mean it to be. That was like the Torino win earlier in the season against when it was Roma Torino on Halloween, if I'm not mistaken, under the famed
Juric.
Good friend of the podcast, Ivan Juric. This one had the hallmarks of a Juric. I think Roma had almost double the amount of fouls that Venezia had. Let's just say it, Andy, it was shithousery, but I don't care. I don't care about the aesthetics. I don't care that it was via penalty. I don't care. And by the way, this is how I know I enjoy to torture myself. I'm ill. I'm under the weather. I have DAZN on, and they're just showing the replays as the afternoon matches begin, just like in under 10 minutes. And they're complaining about how Venezia, the one in the first half, how they should have been awarded the penalty. Speaking of very one of my favorites. Well, you know, I don't even want to give him the dignity of a shout out because he, Luca Marelli, who, again, about as consistent as the weather when it comes to his view on refereeing decisions and the thought process behind said decisions. I mean, Andy, you might as well be playing darts when he tries to explain decisions because there is no consistency, none whatsoever, in his outlook on how things should have been called or handled. Marelli is saying that Venezia should have been awarded a penalty in the first half, even though it was reviewed. Of course, we're speaking about the episode of Gianluca Mancini. But listen, you can't complain about aesthetics in a match like this when you have a team that can barely, I mean, just barely sneak by one of the worst teams in Serie A. I would venture to say the worst team in Serie A. Nonetheless, though, a win is a win is a win is a win. And as I always say, I haven't said this one in quite some time. At the end of the season, when they have the table, there's no like disclosures or there's no fine print as to how you won this game or that game. They came, they got the 3 points. They leave that putrid place. I mean, when you go to Venezia to watch football, that is exactly the kind of match you should expect. And it has nothing necessarily to do with AS Roma. It has everything to do with the stadium, the geographical location of where you are watching said match. But listen, they did what they had to do. We had a debut. Let's just start with that before we get into like the, I want to say the nitty gritty, but there's really not much to get into as far as like finer details, because finer would be far too complimentary for some of the things that happened in this one. But we had a debut. We had a debut for one of the January rivals. What'd you think?
Wait, are you scared of pronouncing his name? Is that what you?
No, not at all, not at all. Okay. My thing with it is, we talked about a little bit January transfer market in the previous episode. I think it was me. I said something to the extent of, you shouldn't expect any of these guys to come in and start right away. And naturally, one of them does. In fact, it was for a suspended Manucone. You had Claudio Ranieri also resting Mats Hummels. He also rested Paredes. So there were some interesting decisions on his part that went into this. But yeah,
that decision to keep Paredes and Hummels away from the pitch sparked all kinds of outrage. Why are we resting them? And blah blah blah. And then, you know, as soon as you see the effect that this schedule had on Mats Hummels, even if you consider his performance against Milan, clearly a guy who needed a breather. Leandro Paredes. Also, he's been constantly playing, and we saw even last season when he was constantly playing that eventually that took a toll on him. You got to freshen them up. It took me out a bit that Ranieri has been so intent on these rotations last few games. And today it was, you know, clearly Salmakers on the bench. Sule on the bench, which I found odd given that he was starting to get those minutes in. But exactly, we get the debut from Gurna Duath, who replaces Manu Kone in that midfield. He is the sort of bully. And I think yes. Like 80% of the team's fouls were probably due to him.
Yes.
He was all over the place. I mean, mostly good. You know, it's always welcome when you go, because one of the reasons that Roma are so inconsistent when playing away from home is that they are timid. They feel the pressure, and they let themselves be dominated by the team that is hosting them on and off the pitch, meaning they let the emotions and the pressure from the opposing team fans get to them, and they let the pressure of the players on the pitch get to them. And Gurna Duath was clearly eager to make his debut and to leave a mark on this game. And he was fouling anything that moved. So that was, you know, that's an encouraging sign from a 21-year-old who makes his first appearance for the club from the start. And then obviously you have some odd choices, like exactly like this, you know, Ranieri's determination to keep Zeki Salik on the pitch at all costs. I actually thought that today's Zeki Salik was good. Even though that sort of there is this belief that, okay, Zeki Salik, in Ranieri's eyes, it seems like Salik has all the skills in the world, because he's not going to change the defensive shape of the team if Salik starts. He'll start Salik as a center back. That is just blows my mind. We also got Nelson in the second half. So listen, again, as you say, at the end of the day, what you look for is those 3 points written on the side of the table, right? The +3 and Roma climbing up the table. That's all you care about. We've seen it too many times, even here in Venezia, exactly in Mourinho's first season. Remember, we go here and we lose 2-1. Yes. Quite an awful performance, and a sort of sign of the things that were to come in that season. Exactly. Also playing away, we sort of had this trend. We have this trend where each away game just doesn't give us any sense of security, no matter what result we're coming off of. Tonight, given the match against Milan, given the kind of deflating admission of just not being as good as them, sort of being short on firepower compared to Milan, today was a very much needed and welcome result where the team showed a very pragmatic attitude, where I'm thinking of Mancini, I'm thinking of Ndika, I'm thinking of Svr, were played very key roles in getting this result over the line. And we're recording this and it's 3 p.m. So all the games start and you got 3 points in the bag. So what's there to complain about?
Right. Nothing. You can't complain about this one again, especially considering just how long it seemed like Roma were able to do anything away from home. Even the early days of Ranieri, man, that performance at Como still is a cloud that hangs over me. I think of that performance, and it is just astonishing to see how many missteps this team has had, particularly away from home. But I think you kind of said it right there. I need to stick up, though, for Zeki Salik, because I thought he was good today, as you said. And he's one of those players that, for some reason, he garners the criticism so quickly with mistakes that when he plays good, it's almost many are apprehensive to give to him credit. I'll never understand why, because admittedly, I do like the guy, relatively close with his agent, and I do have this weird affection for him, especially because, again, I always go back to that Milan performance at San Siro. That is one of those things that everybody seems to have retconned in their mind when they discuss Zeki Salik. Now, again, I'm not going to pretend that this guy has been a Cafu on the right side for Roma, but he's doing things that, listen, there's probably 5 dozen players we would prefer in Serie A over him to play as a central defender in a back three. That's an obvious
right, right. But I think a lot of people have that problem that, you know, you brought in an additional defender and yet, you know, there is this, oh, okay, Hummels is not there, or Mancini is suspended, fine, let's have Zeki Salik as a center back. I don't know if that's ideal for anybody, including him.
Well, hey, he's not picking the team, and if he played like crap, I would say, okay, let's have at it. But for as many strays as this guy catches, and I will admit he has not been great this season, played good today. Can put the way, take the magazine out of the firearm, everybody. Give this guy a break. He always seems to be the target for the when everyone just needs to let out their anger or their frustration when it comes to Roma. He is coming close to how I used to feel about Cristante, who, if you want to talk about just the very bizarre trajectories in one season, Andy, he goes from starting to disappearing. Just a gap so bizarre and long of him not playing. It seems like he's going to go at 100% certainty in January. Several teams didn't acquire because, again, Peperizo, I mean, that guy would try to tell you that he, you know, Cristante possesses many of the same skills as, I don't know, Pirlo or something, the way he discusses him and the number of clubs that were interested in acquiring him. And Andy, was it, that match last week, was it Udinese was the first one where he started in such a very long time? Or was it, remember, just out of nowhere, Ranieri starts him. And it seems like it's the first time he starts in months.
Well, yeah, since that injury, yeah.
Yes. And this is another one where he begins in the midfield. Now, he was not good today, so I'm not going to blow up his spot too much. But it is curious, some of the things that you see in Ranieri's thinking. Now, obviously, Kone suspended, Paredes being rested. Those are going to be the two names he's going to continue with. Salamakers, same thing. By the way, the thing with Salamakers, do you like how just within hours of Tammy Abraham purging Roma, you have all of the articles of Milan wanting to do everything possible to bring and to keep Salamakers for next season? I love
yeah, that was it came out before the match, after the match, that all of a sudden Sergio Conceição is begging Milan to keep Salamakers, as if right before the game that was Conceição's thought of, I want Salamakers on my team. And as soon as we lost the very next day, I got a bundle of these articles that basically, you know, already were predicting Roma's complete downfall based on on that, on the fact that Salmakers maybe will not stay at the club at the end of the season. So it's very funny how the wind blows, how the wind shifts and steers you in different directions based on what results come your way.
I think Roma will keep him. He fits in well, versatile. He can play many roles, very comfortable in different formations. I think he will end up staying. But it is funny how this works. It's typical of Italian media to do that. It didn't surprise me, but it's just when you think you would like to see things sort of a new leaf be turned when, in terms of the media, the old ways of thinking, the old ways of operation, they continue forward with it. Just one more thing on Venezia. Eusebio Di Francesco. I beat up on this guy a lot, admittedly. I do have this weird, I won't say affection, but I feel bad for the guy because, Andy, listen, just professionally as a manager, I shouldn't feel bad for him because cats have 9 lives. Eusebio has 10. That's sort of the ethos that we have anytime we discuss him. This guy has some form of blackmail. There is just something hidden away in the depths or in the deep rooms over at the Langley, your top shelf JFK stuff, next shelf, stuff of all of the various psyops conducted by them. And then just somewhere in that middle row, there has to be just a box of things that Eusebio Di Francesco has asked to them to hold on for safekeeping just in case something happens. Kind of like Jeffrey Epstein's black book. I should...
I knew you were going to use that. I was about to say Jeffrey Epstein. Oh my God, John. I didn't think we were going to mention Jeffrey Epstein on this. I preferred when it was just tourism only, not sex tourism.
Well, hey, whoa. Listen, I feel very bad that Andy, he's going to get axed very, very soon. I used to be much closer to him, but I used to talk a lot to his son, Federico, as well, who he's with Palermo now. And I have a lot of respect for him as a person. It is painful at how polite.
You have respect for Eusebio Di Francesco?
Yeah. Well, listen.
You've done nothing but bash Eusebio.
No, but I've said
since we started this podcast.
But I've always prefaced it with how painfully nice it is. Like, yeah, he is. It is so difficult. Not difficult. It's easy to make fun of him, but it does hurt me a little bit because he is so painfully nice. Like, to the point where you almost feel as if it is fake, but then you come to realize it's not fake. Also very short too. So I don't know. I don't know, but it seems like he's barely over a meter tall. But I feel bad for him. He's going to get sacked again, but every time he does, Andy, that is the one aspect of him or the one trait that he has that I can't help but admire. Every time you think that guy is done, he's dead, it's finished, it's over, like the Undertaker lying on the canvas, he just pops up and he reemerges somewhere, somehow able to convince some poor new owner who just got promoted from Serie B. I don't know what he says. I don't know what he does. I don't know what is in the suitcase when he pushes it across the table when they are in the meeting. I don't know. All I do know is that he's a great guy. I feel bad for him. But I mean, to think that this guy, like, if we just step back, just forget my opinion of him, Andy, forget your opinion of him, just step back. Half a decade ago, this guy was one goal away from a Champions League final. What? I mean, you want to talk about just trajectory.
He went from that to coaching Hellas Verona for 3 games and getting sacked. Now let's remember.
Yes.
That I think that happened within a span of like a year and a half.
Yes, it did. Even too, there was another awkward phase of him at Cagliari where.
No. First, there was that phase at Sampdoria, then Hellas Verona, which was awkward as hell, then Cagliari, which they
spent a ton in the summer.
He fools everybody at Cagliari. He seems to be getting on well. He goes on a horrendous run. They renew his contract. They renew his contract and they sack him the game after renewing his contract.
Again, that is how you know there is something in that box of his at Langley, you know? Only in this country can something like that happen. Renewal, dismissal. It's fantastic stuff. Speaking of fantastic stuff, let's go to the Europa League, where I have to blame UEFA because they're live. I believe I said Pilsen. That was who they were facing, Andy. Obviously, that was incorrect. So I'm going to blame UEFA Europa League's website because their live bracket of the Europa League tournament was incorrect. If we want to speak of pleasant memories, teams that have never haunted Roma in Europe, teams that Roma always get past easily, very little drama, very few occasions where you have these
meltdown.
I was about to say Romanisti within the squad, the Senatori, making decisions so beyond stupidity that it's hard to even find the words as to how to label what they've done. I know everybody likes to point to De Rossi. That was what, like 16 minutes before the sending off? Because I always remember Porto. I have such vivid memories of De Rossi, Vermaelen, Florenzi doing one of the most bizarre, most breathtakingly stupid,
boneheaded. Just. And then that episode. Wait, what is it?
Do you remember how late in the game he did that, though, Andy?
I know. And then there was that episode on Schick. The two combined left. I remember distinctly that night. I was in my apartment in Amsterdam. And I just refused to eat. I was about to have dinner. And the things that I saw in that game in those final minutes, the Schick, I don't remember if he gets tackled or something, but he falls in the penalty area. Then Florenzi does that. Then remember Dzeko goes up to Pepe and Dzeko simulates the Pepe getting, completely humiliating night. I just remember feeling so dejected by the fact that these guys were representing us. I was like, oh my God, like, who are these people? You know? And then obviously after the match, who goes out there and says, hey, teniamo la testa alta perché abbiamo fatto una grandissima prestazione. Of course, Florenzi goes out there and says that after doing that shirt pull. It made me want to blow my brains out while watching those final minutes of utter horror, because it was really and Porto have had that with us for years. I mean, let's remember again that Vermaelen, De Rossi losing his shit, Emerson losing his shit. I mean, a horror. And people, I remember distinctly when Porto came back and they blasted us 3-0 under Spalletti in those Champions League qualifiers. People's concern was that Totti hadn't played. Like that was their main concern. We were absolutely demolished. We were playing in nine men, and the people were like, oh, "Why didn't Totti play? Well, this is his last Champions League match."
That should have warned us as to what we were going to be treated to that season. The Vermaelen thing lived so vividly in my head because he was at that time, obviously now it probably doesn't seem like it, but Andy, this was when he was brought in, it was viewed as one of those, oh wow, wow, Roma got this guy from Arsenal, you know, he can become a reclamation project, so to speak, kind of like Dzeko. And it took less than 20 minutes for everything to just come crashing back down to earth. the Florenzi thing as well. I'm pretty sure I made it a GIF on Twitter, which I'm barely on anymore. But there's the episode against Porto, and then there's another one. I believe it's either Genoa or Milan, where he is defending, and an attacker just does one of the slowest, worst.
That was the first. That was the first game of Paulo Fonseca. Yeah.
Yes.
And Florenzi just jumps into the air. Yeah.
It was like the only way I can describe it is, you know,
it's like a pump fake in the NBA, but like the slowest pump fake ever. It's like Draymond Green doing a pump fake, you know.
It reminded me of anybody familiar with NBA, Jason Williams, one of my favorite players of all time. Sure. White Chocolate, as he's come to be known. One of my favorite, where he just fakes players out with his dribbling. It was as if he had done that to a 99-year-old. Florenzi does the most bizarre, breathtakingly stupid, like, attempts to block it. But he doesn't jump up. He jumps to, like, the side, allowing the attacker to just, you know, go 10 to 15 yards past him. And, of course, it led to a goal. Listen, this thing with Porto, obviously, Ranieri is prioritizing this. No more Coppa Italia to worry about, so we can at least put that in the rear view, so to speak. But when it comes to this match, Andy, you don't have to look very far as to get an idea as to where sort of it lies in his psyche in terms of importance. You don't rest Hummels, you don't rest Paredes.
No.
Like that,
and there is also the thing that, you know, I mean, you look at Porto recently had a managerial change. They're completely all over the place. They have been far from the good old Porto that we remember from the days of Zgaglia, Serge Gonçalo. And now we're looking at a team that who's gonna come to Rome, who's gonna be playing. Ivan Marcano is going to be there. Our good friend Ivan Marcano at 49 years of age is going to be there. And you better believe that in a season where Bove, Tammy Abraham, Spinazzola, Romelu Lukaku, you better believe that in a season where those guys scored, I can't even imagine Ivan Marcano going up for a incredible header at the 95th minute, getting a last second winner for Porto at the Stadio Olimpico. The Stadio Olimpico completely having a meltdown over this guy, who I think may have made 15 appearances for us or something like that, maybe 10. I can't imagine.
He had a goal. Oh my! Hold on. Our data department just
messed. He had a goal.
Ivan Marcano had a goal.
Did you know that? Maybe it was like a lucky bounce or something. I don't remember him.
Hold.
Did he take part in something? Or was it when he did he score against? No, I don't remember that.
Someone is about to be sacked from our data department if this turns out to be incorrect. That would have been
great to have.
Oh, someone well, just... torn. He has a torn. Oh well, this is how you know he at least brought a piece of Roma back. Back.
Yeah,
back
he was Wolverine. Injured. He was injured a lot.
Torn ACL right now.
Yeah,
torn ACL right now.
No, but he's been included in their UEFA list, so he is available. He's available to
wait
play.
Wait a minute. Hold on. He does have a goal with Roma. My what? Man, see, this is what I mean. It was in the Coppa Italia. See, I like to believe I have an extremely vivid memory.
We missed a big piece of history right there.
I mean, but again, this is where I think, like, this is how scarred we are. Again, somebody breaks into my home and my life depends on whether I can recall, name when he did that. Fire away, man. I could not tell. You didn't know that, right? I had no idea that guy had a goal for Roma. Okay. Well, you are right. I mean, this isn't the same Porto. What are we supposed to... We don't do predictions. Everybody knows that by now. Listen, I made the mistake of looking at the odds to win the competition of the Europa League. Do you, like, if you had to guess, like, top five, top 10.
A percentage or what? How much?
No, like, of all the teams, like, they have fifth best odds, sixth best odds. Where do you think Roma, like, if you just have to guess, to win outright?
I don't think very high. I just don't think. I mean, maybe just based on name alone, but based on our track record so far this season, I mean, come on, John. Who are we kidding? Who are we kidding right here?
No, you're. I mean, you're right, but that is where 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They have ninth best odds currently. Lyon, Galatasaray, Sociedad, Frankfurt, Lazio, Bilbao, Tottenham, Manchester United are all the ones with better odds than them. I don't know. I don't know. Trying to figure out this team this season at this point seems to be a fruitless exercise, and I can't even begin to tell you how they'll appear in this match, what their priority, or not what their priority, but what their mindset will be. Do the previous seasons and the success in Europe, do they necessarily have an impact on this one? I mean, I would say no, but I mean, I do like their odds in this. I do think they will advance. We'll do predictions. You think they'll advance, yeah?
Drag me into this, John. Come on, man. Don't do this to me.
No, okay. Well, I'll just say...
I thought that they could go through in Coppa Italia, and look what happened, okay? So just even that smidge of hope was blown out from my hands, okay? I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, well, in what mood am I going to be next time that we record? Because exactly, it can swing from one way to another. It just goes from 0 to 100 with Roma. Can they go through? Realistically, sure. They're facing a team that has been a mess, just as they've been a mess. So, yeah. But if they come out playing like they did against Eintracht, for sure. If they come out playing like they did against AZ Alkmaar, forget about it. You know, because if you play like that, no matter whether it's Como, whether it's AZ Alkmaar, whether it's today's Venezia or Porto, you're not gonna go through. And it's that kind of that's the kind of determination that you have, that you must have today. The team wins because of a certain determination that they're just not gonna lose this shitty game. It was a shitty game. It was a terrible place to play in. Awful time, because everybody knows that sort of you feel the pressure to perform right before everybody else does. And yet they willed it. They willed it to the end line. So that's what Roma have to show. But that doesn't matter if we're talking about Europa League or Serie A. It's just something that we have to keep repeating ad nauseum. That they just have to will these wins into existence. These wins are not just going to appear out of nowhere for them. The opponent is approachable. This competition is approachable, just like Coppa Italia was doable. We're not talking about impossible objectives, but we are talking about a team that is just very known for delivering shortcoming after shortcoming, mistake after mistake. And so I'm sitting here. I would like to tell you that, yes, I believe they can go through. But then doubts start to creep in, doubts that Roma subjected me to. And now they're there, lodged in the back of my brain, and will be so until the end of the season, no matter what this team is.
Perfect way to end it. All right. Back after the match against Porto. Until then, everyone, ciao.